Good morning, Honourable Members. Keshwin, are we forming the necessary quorum at this point? I understand the Honourable Members in the forum, which I understand would probably be done by now.
Good morning, Chair. Members. We are correct, Chair. We have 7 members.
Okay, great, thanks. Thank you very much. Welcome, Honourable Members, to this meeting. And let me also take this opportunity to welcome Deputy Minister of Police, as well as the team from IPIS, the Executive Director and her team, as well as the Acting Secretary for Civilian Secretariat and the team that's present. Honourable Members, just in terms of the record, I just want to go through which members are currently present. We have Honourable Maleka, Honourable Bartlett, Honourable Mtetwa, Honourable Mikolakis, Honourable Mazai, Honourable Dlamini, Honourable Ndungeni, Honourable Barnard, Honourable Zadohu. I hope I didn't miss out any Honourable Members, but welcome. Just in terms of apologies, we received an apology from Honourable Smith and Honourable Dangle for this meeting. Furthermore, in terms of the budget and ADP process with regard to IPIS and the Civilian Secretariat, we also received an apology from the Minister who is at Cabinet today, but the Deputy Minister is with us. We have just a few items that we need to dispense of before we go into the budgets and APPs of the department. These are more, this process shouldn't take us very long. We want to deal with the 2 legal practice council regulations. And furthermore, we'll also get a briefing with regard to the process followed in relation to the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill. Thereafter, we will go into the budget and APP budget, and after that, the budget and APP of CSPs. The parliamentary legal advisor who's with us today has requested that we actually start with the second item on members, which we could do because the first item is more internal. Just in terms of the second agenda item, Honourable Members will recall that on the 2nd of May of this year, the National Assembly approved the report of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development on the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill, which amends Section 6 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And the amendment is to include South African Sign Language as an official language, which is an important step to promote the rights of persons who are deaf and hard of hearing. So Parliament had to then deal with whether the scope of the bill requires a supporting vote by the National Council of Provinces for purposes of its Section 74 processing, or whether it only requires adoption by the National Assembly. Parliament has a legal opinion in this regard, and therefore we have Dr. Barbara Lewis, who will brief the committee on the legal opinion which has been circulated to members of the committee, and we hope this briefing will also serve to clarify the matter as to why this bill has not been referred to our committee. And let me then hand over to you, Ms. Lewis, who can then speak to the legal opinion. Members can just interact with the presentation if there's matters for clarity, and we hope on members then we can then look into adopting a report for the House. Over to you, Ms. Lewis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Chair, I'm going to be very brief because I think you've captured the essence of it all. This was not a bill that was very convoluted or like big in content. The content was very specific. It was merely adding a new or an additional official language. So if the members look at Section 6 of the Constitution, that first provision in 6.1 sets out what our country's official languages are. And what this bill did is it merely added South African Sign Language to that list. It did not really deal with anything that was related to language policies or how we use languages for government purposes and all of that. And that is where the difference comes as to why it's not necessary for the NCOP to vote on this bill. Because when it comes to provincial competencies and language issues, the provinces are looking at the policy issues, the use of language for a government purpose. So because it's not the provinces aren't involved in determining at a national level what the official languages are, and this bill was very narrow in scope. If we look at the Section 74(3) considerations, the Constitution is very clear when it comes to a constitutional amendment. When it's a Section 1 amendment, a Chapter 2 amendment, or something that deals with an issue that affects the provinces, like boundaries or issues that provinces regulate, then it requires a vote by the NCOP. But because this bill was very specific and very narrow in scope and does not fall within any of those categories, there's no constitutional requirement for an NCOP vote to process this bill to the president for signing. This, however, does not mean that the committee does not have any scope to comment or to support the bill as a policy position or a political position, because any committee in Parliament has the authority, and Gershwin can elaborate or like guide me here, but has the authority to report on any issue it regards as important to any of the houses as depending on where the committee falls. So there's nothing wrong with the committee in supporting the position set out in the bill by making a statement or a short report stating that this is an important development. It supports the idea of equality and dignity for all, especially because it's not just sign language, it's South African Sign Language being acknowledged here. And that also gives people greater access and a greater support when it comes to the fulfillment and of rights. So there is a very important shift happening here, but it's not necessarily a shift that specifically speaks to a provincial language policy issue. So that's the only reason why it's not going to the NCOP for a vote as per the send it to this to the president. But nothing prevents the committee from supporting it as a principled position in support of equality and dignity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewis. I think, members, that is the brief presentation in terms of the process. This is a very important issue as well, and it's also a very important step which promotes the rights of persons who are deaf and hard of hearing in line with the Constitution. And I would imagine that members would support this amendment with regard to the fulfillment of rights. And as also explained, the process followed by Parliament in relation to this amendment by Ms. Lewis. And the fact that as a committee, I mean, we can make a declaration in the House with regard to support to this amendment. All members, I'm going to open it up to yourself if you have any questions of clarity, if members are clear. Then we'll take this process forward. I don't see any member wanting. I want to assume that members are happy with the explanation. Let me then also thank Dr. Lewis for her presentation and for the clarity she's provided to the committee that indeed the bill does not speak to amend any provision that affects the interests of provinces as set out in Section 74 of the Constitution. And thus, accordingly, there is no requirement to refer the bill for a supporting vote in the National Council of Provinces for purpose of its processing. I think it will be important for us to also deal with this matter in the House, especially with regard to when the processing of this amendment started. There was an expectation that the NCOP might deal with this, and there has been some requests or sort around when the NCOP process is going to start. I think this will be important that we take it through the House and we deal with the matter there, and as the NCOP, we'll also be able to provide or state our support with regard to this amendment. Having said that, honourable members, allow me to table the committee report in this regard for adoption by the committee. I'll ask Gershwin perhaps to flag it. The report is relatively short, and if I can just quickly go through it, it's a report of the Select Committee on the passage of the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill through Parliament dated 10th of May 2023. In essence, as the Select Committee on Security and Justice, having considered the legal requirements for the passing of the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill by the National Assembly, we report that we have concluded our deliberations and have satisfied ourselves that the legal requirements for the passing of this bill has been fulfilled as the constitutional mandate expressed in Section 74 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Our members, are there any additions you would want to make to this? If not, if you would want to adopt it, I think what will happen is if we adopt this report, then it would allow us also to make the relevant statements in the House in relation to our support to this amendment, the 18th Amendment, in addition to what we're stating in this report. And given the procedures within the NCOP, obviously parties will also be able to make declarations in this regard. That being said, honourable members, if you're happy with the report, is there any move for the report, to adopt the report? Honourable Bartlett?
I move, honourable chairperson.
Thank you very much, honourable Bartlett. Is there any seconder in this regard?
Chair, I will second it.
Thank you very much, Honourable Badenhorst. I doubt there are any objections and abstentions, but if there are, please indicate so. Okay, if not, thank you very much, Honourable Members. This report is duly adopted. Let me then go back to the first agenda item, and perhaps let me also ask once again, Deputy Minister, if you could just bear with us. We just have another short agenda item to deal with. Thanks, DM. Just in terms of the two legal practice council regulations, which as a committee, we received a briefing by the Department of Justice and the Legal Practice Council on these regulations. They're dealing in essence with the elections of the Legal Practice Council and the issue of community service. And in terms of our deliberations, members had no objections to these regulations. And in terms of Section 94, Subsection C of the Legal Practice Act 2014, these regulations must be approved by Parliament. So given that we had no issues with this, all members, allow me then to just table the first report, which is in relation to Section 94, Subsection C of the Legal Practice Act, and with regard to community services, this is for approval. In terms of the body of the report, it's slightly around the context of the practice regulations, and also in terms of the role that Parliament has with regard to this. If you can maybe just go to the point six, if I'm not mistaken, Gershwin. So in essence, the proposed regulation provides for the rendering of community service by candidate legal practitioners who must undertake 8 hours per annum community service, and by practicing legal practitioners who must render 40 hours per annum community service. That being said, on members, our recommendation as a committee is that we recommend that the National Council of Provinces approve the draft regulations as tabled. If there's any addition you'd like to make to the report, and if not, if any member would like to move for the adoption of the report. Maleka?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the report.
Thank you very much, Maleka. Is there any seconder?
I second, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Are there any objections and abstentions? Okay, if none, members, this report is duly adopted. Maybe then we can then go to the second report, Kishori. This is in terms of Section 94, Subsection 1 of the Legal Practice Act. Once again, honorable members, the body of the report is similar to the previous one. If you can then go to 7 version, if I'm not mistaken, where the proposed amendments are intended to ensure a smooth, continuous transition from an existing council to another without an overlap in administrative function, confusion, and duplication of elected members. Provision is also made for the option of electronic voting. Our members, in terms of the committee recommendation, having considered the regulations, we recommend that the NCOP approve the set draft regulations as tabled. That being said, our members, if there's any addition members would like to make, and or if not, if members would like to move for the adoption of the report. Any member would like to move for the adoption of the report? Anu Maleka?
I move for the adoption of the report, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any seconders?
Ndongeni seconds, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndongeni. Thank you very much. Any objections and abstentions? Okay, if none, thank you very much, all members. I think that the report is duly adopted. That being said, all members, let us then move into the third agenda item, which is with regard to the IPED budget and APP. Members, the IPED, they have an important responsibility as an oversight body over the South African Police Services and the Municipal Police Services. Importantly, they also investigate serious crimes that are allegedly committed by a member of the police service, and they make the appropriate recommendations. Let me also once again take this opportunity to welcome IPED Deputy Minister and the Executive Director of IPED, as well as the team, to the committee meeting. And let me also call them the DM to then perhaps make some comments before we get IPED to present the APP and budget to the committee. Deputy Minister, if I can perhaps hand over to yourself.
No. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks, members of the committee. It's an honor and privilege for us to appear before you to present our programs for the this financial year. Today being IPED and the Civilian Secretariat, led by the Executive Director Mentoring and the team, and the Secretariat led by the Ex-Secretary. Yeah, I'm not audible, ne?
Jim, perhaps if you could switch off your
video. Am I audible?
You are audible, DM, but if you could switch off your video. Okay. DM?
Can anyone hear me?
We can hear you, not that well, but we do hear you. Please continue.
Okay.
Well, that's much better, GM.
I think let's allow the executive director to proceed to present. Let's allow the executive director to present, or Philip director to proceed, Chair, the reading.
Okay, thank you very
allow
much,
the ED to present, Chair, the reading.
Yes, thank you very much, DM. Executive director, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, honorable members, as well as colleagues from CSP and my colleagues from IPED. Today we will be presenting our budget for 2023-2024 as well as our annual plan. Thanks. Mr. Makolona, move to the next slide. Our summary is as follows. My overview, IPIT's MTF budget, adjustment to strategic plan 2020-2025, APP 2023-2024, and then this conclusion. My overview. The purpose of the presentation is to brief Select Committee on Security and Justice on IPIT's budget for 2023 MTEF, adjustment to the strategic plan 2020-2025 and annual performance plan 2023-2024 financial year. The total budget allocation for 2023-2024 is 364.3 million, with compensation of employees contributing 67.5%, that is 246 million of the total allocation. The department will therefore continue to reprioritize its budget to fund any priority areas. So please note that the IP's budget, it's mainly labor intensive. A total of 13,929 active cases were carried over from 2023-2024 financial year. These are the cases of the previous years. In the 2022-2023 financial year, 3,965 cases were completed. That is 53% of those are backlog cases. There are three quality assurers that were appointed and have started with their work to strengthen quality of investigation. Additional satellite offices were established through collaboration with provincial departments of community safety. Gauteng, we have four. KZN, we've got four. Northern Cape, they gave us two offices. The challenges that we're experiencing as a directorate, we still have capacity constraints, taking into consideration high case workload, which also affects turnaround time of completing an investigation. Chairperson, I'm actually pausing here because I just want you to know that our capacity it's not sufficient to deal with all the 1,500 estimated police station, as well as 193 police officers, as well as the metros. Supervisors are conducting investigations to inadequate number of investigators, thus impacting on effective supervision to subordinates and the quality of investigation. There's limited footprint, which affects service delivery and response time to crime scenes. Ineffectiveness of the case management system. We have a case management system that has been there from a long time ago during the ICD's time. And this system, we really need to make sure that we terminate the service and come up with a new case management system that is going to be adaptable to how we operate in the institution. And that system must make sure that it is also adaptable to other systems, such as your case system of SAPS, as well as the justice system. There are potential threats and risks to IPIT investigators. Chair and honorable members, we consistently and continue to experience this challenge where our members are being threatened for investigating. The latest one was the one at Ekurhuleni, where our team members arrested some metro police officers. And when they were out on bail, our informer was killed and our members got some threats. The key priorities for 2023-2024 financial year. One is the finalization of the IPIT bill. Chairperson, we are busy with this process. Yesterday, we were meeting with the DG's cluster, and this is where we were discussing this bill. Tomorrow, we'll be presenting it to the minister's meeting. We continue to focus on improving the quality of investigation. We're giving high priority to cases related to allegations of gender-based violence and violence against people from other vulnerable groups and increasing access to IPIT services. We continue to prioritize the implementation of backlog strategy in order to address the continuous increasing backlog cases. I spoke about the development of a new case management system. And then number five, we continue to prioritize the implementation of the ICT plan over MTF period in order to cover the infrastructure revamp and upgrades, which includes the enhancement of the information security systems, disaster recovery, business enabling platforms such as Microsoft, SharePoint, and Exchange. Next slide. Continue with the expansion of footprint. I've already spoken about that in an effort to improve access to its services through collaboration with the provincial community safety departments. We're addressing gaps that we identified through assessment that was conducted, which resulted in non-compliance with the OHS Act. Already we've started engaging with the Department of Labor. We're having a workshop on the 30 and 31 of May with the Department of Labor on OHS. The identified gaps requires the knowledge and skills to ensure that the directorate meets its obligation of ensuring and creating a health and safety working environment of its employees in accordance with the Act. We are also going to commence with the process of entering into an MOU with the ACFE, that is the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners of South Africa. The institution will provide anti-fraud training and education for the core function to streamline the training of investigators that will assist in professionalizing the investigation environment. We started engaging with a National School of Governance to facilitate the collaboration with the University of KZN for training of investigators on forensic investigation, and also for state security agencies to train senior managers on cybersecurity. I must also add that, Chair, we are also going to be trained on MIS from the 1st of June. It is important that we are trained on MIS so that we are able to classify our documents properly as an institution. We're also in a process of establishing a policy and research subcomponent, and this will assist us in engaging the impact of the work that we are doing as IPIT. Next slide, sir. The IPIT 2023 MTF budget. Chairperson, I'm going to request that our CFO takes us through the budget of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Executive Director, and good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, Deputy Minister, our colleagues from Civilian Secretariat, as well as IP colleagues. Chair, this is the allocation that we have made in order to respond to all the plans and activities that are included in the APP that was formulated by management of IPID. Chair, in terms of the first slide that is before honorable members, Chair, you'll notice that our allocation from let me check. Am I better now?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair, and apology for that. Chair, the slide that is presented here is the budget that has been allocated to our provincial offices, Chair. When we share this limited resources among the provinces, there's a criteria that we have developed. Chair, we use the size of the province because provinces are not equal in terms of the size. We also consider the case intake, because when we evaluate the number of cases that have been registered by each province, they are not the same. So we consider those cases so that we can know which provinces have registered a high number of cases and which one is registered the low number of cases. And Chair, we also consider the number of investigations that are allocated, and we mainly consider this so that we can know the tools of trace that are required per province. So we look at how many
investigators have been appointed in a particular province. And lastly, Chair, we consider the distance that is traveled by each province. And I'm going to give an example, which you take Gauteng and compare it with Northern Cape. In terms of the budget for travel, Gauteng, as big as it is, the budget is less than Northern Cape because of the distance that Northern Cape is traveling. For example, between their provincial office in Kimberley to Springbok, which is a long distance for them when they have to respond to the crime scene and other matters related to investigation, like visiting the witnesses and so forth. So we consider such when we allocate this budget. Therefore, when you look at the allocation one, Gauteng is the highest, on 23-24 with 36 million because of the case intake and the nature of cases of classification of cases that they are currently dealing with. Followed by KZN, Chair, which is one of the hotspot provinces, which has received 23 million in the year under review, followed by Western Cape by an allocation of 23 million for the year under review. And the province with the lowest allocation share is Northern Cape for the same financial year under review by 15 million. So this is what we have located to the provinces.
The total amount out of our budget is 184 million,
which we have given
bulk of our budget that has been allocated to the provinces, because that's where the service delivery is. Next slide. Chair, we are also demonstrating to the Chairperson, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, on how our MTF budget has been allocated. Chair, you would then check the 23-24, which is the current or the under review, from 22-23, which is the previous financial year. Our budget
increased by 0.24%.
Not even 1%, 10%. 0.24%. So, Jeff,
when you look at the growth against all the annual regulated increases, such as your 60 annual increase, your cleaning services annual increase, your office leases annual increase, it will then mean we need to cut some of our activities within Commission in order to honor our contractual obligation. So, Chair, when we are saying this department is bleeding as far as resource allocation is concerned, this is exactly what we mean. Chair, to go to your economic classification, our bulk of the allocation, Chair, is in compensation of employees. Executive Director has already indicated that we are an intensive organization. We rely more on investigators.
Therefore, each and every cent that we realized, we then redirect to the compensation of employees in order to have more numbers there. So, Chair, in the year under review,
when we looked at the ATP and the targets that have been planned, we have since decided as management to allocate an amount of almost 68% of our budget, our total budget for 364 million. That 68% has been allocated to compensation of employees so that we can have officials who will be able to
execute the activities that are included in the APP. The
allocation of compensation of employees is followed by equipment services, which has received 80% of the allocation, mainly to cover contractual obligations, as indicated, and then followed by machinery and equipment, mainly to procure ICT-related equipment, as well as vehicles that are used by
our investigators. So, Chair, that's how we have appropriated the legal that we have got in the current financial year. Next slide. Chair, the next slide, we just wanted to share with Chairperson and honourable members
how we've been spending our budget. Chair, the slide does not only demonstrate the capacity to spend, it also demonstrates the challenges that we have raised of resource allocation, because we normally put the stop in March.
Good. In order to make sure that we don't exceed our budget, because if we exceed our budget, we'll then incur what we call unauthorized expenditure, which is not permissible by the TV.
So, Chair, what we normally do, from January to the last month of the financial year, which is March, we have what we call a regular budget control committee meeting on a weekly basis, just to try to closely monitor our budget, prioritize key areas within the investigation, just to make sure that we don't go outside our budget. So, Chair, the 100% is based mainly on the control that we have. If we had more than this, we're going to spend that money and make sure that we achieve all
the plans that are included in our strategic document. So, Chair, that is how we spend our money in this financial year from 2019-20 to the last financial year, which is the previous financial year, 2022-23. Next slide. So, thank you, Chair. That would be my presentation.
In terms of the budget and expenditure.
Thank you, CFO. We are now going to be dealing with the adjustment to the strategic plan 2020 to 2025. Chairperson, I would therefore request, with your permission, to allow the Director for Strategy to take us through this process. Mem Letlape, over to you.
thank you, Edie. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, Chair, and honourable members, DM, colleagues from Civilian Secretariat and IPED. In terms of the presentation that I will be talking to, I will be covering the adjustments to the strategic plan for 2020 to 2025. And also the APP for 2023-2024. In terms of the strategic plan,
we have four outcome indicators. We have four outcomes with nine outcome indicators. And as far as the changes that were effected, it's only one indicator that was introduced. There were no changes to the existing outcome indicators. And the new outcome indicator that was introduced is a percentage of cases prosecuted by the NPA, and the target is set at 7%. So the intention is to ensure that we closely monitor the outcomes of the cases that we refer to the NPA for prosecution. The ED has already alluded to the measures that we have introduced with the appointment of quality assurers, and that is an intervention that will be assisting the department in improving our prosecution rate. We can go to the next slide. This is just a reflection on what has been existing in our strategic plan. The first outcome, effective and efficient administrative support, which program one is contributing to. And we have two outcome indicators. The first one is improved financial governance with the target of achieving a clean audit. And the second outcome indicator is percentage increase of vacancies filled within 6 months with a target of 90%. And the next outcome indicator is reduced level of police criminality and misconduct, which is directly linked to our core function under program two. And our outcome indicators is increase in number of criminal cases decided by the NPA. These are matters that we would have referred to the NPA for decision. And the next one is increase in number of disciplinary recommendations initiated. These are recommendations that would have referred to the SAPS and also the MPS to institute disciplinary action against the members based on the outcomes of the investigation. And the target is 2,500 for both indicators. And the next one is increasing number of disciplinary recommendations that are finalized. These are disciplinary actions that would have been initiated and finalized. And the target is 2,000. And the last one is the one that I've just alluded to, which is the new indicator, the outcome indicator that was introduced for implementation in the current financial year. We can go to the next slide.
And for Executive Director, I'm sorry for my interruption. Executive Director, I just may have a suggestion to make, because I think we had indicated to yourself that we have limited time in terms of your presentation. I propose that we don't go live, read everything on the APP, but speak to it, but speak to the slides rather than read everything, so that members have a sense in terms of what is captured. Also note that we do have your presentation as well. So please, if you could maybe speed up a bit. Otherwise, we're not going to finish with you. But thanks, Executive Director.
Noted, Chair. Member Letlapi, let's comply.
Noted, ED. Thank you, Chair. For Program 3 and Program 4, there were no changes to the outcome indicators, and the target, they remain as is. We can go to the next slide. Next slide. We are now moving to the APP. On the APP, I think I will focus only on the changes that were effected. We introduced one new indicator, which is number of ICT governance policies approved, and the target is 4. We can move to the next slide, because the other changes is with regards to the targets, the MTF targets. The ICT plan, the target was increased upward throughout the MTF period from 60% and 70% in the first financial year, 80 and 90 in the two outer years. And for number of governance policies approved, which is the new indicator, I've already alluded to this one, the target is 4, with one in the second financial year. and two in the third year. And for the target on implementation of annual internal audit plan, the target is still at 90% throughout the MTF period. And for the percentage implementation of risk mitigation strategies, the target is still at 70% throughout the three financial years. And for vacancy rate, we are still targeting to maintain our vacancy rate at 10%. And for percentage implementation of youth development strategy, the target is also still maintained at 80%. Next slide. The other indicators under program one is representation of youth in the department. The target is still maintained at 19%. Women representation at SMS is still at 50%. And people living with disability representation in the department is still, the target is still maintained at 3%. And for procurement of goods and services from women-owned enterprises, the target was increased from 30% to 40%. In line with the national target from the national strategy for GBV. And under program two, we have introduced one new output indicator. It's number of cell inspections that are conducted at police stations, and the target is 108, and all the provinces will be contributing collectively towards the attainment of this target. We can go to the next slide on the changes to the MTF targets. For deaths in police custody, the target was increased from 80 to 150 in year 1 year to 175 and 200. And Chairperson, also just to indicate that the changes in the targets were informed by historic performance, active cases that we currently have in our workload, and also the available resources. And for death as a result of police action, the target was retained at 240. For discharge of an official firearm, the target was increased upward from 370 to 450 throughout the three financial years. Rape by police officer, the target was increased from 86 in year one, year two, and year three is at 90%. And for rape while in police custody, the target was retained at one. And this is the reason being that we did not have any active cases when the previous financial year ended. All active cases were finalized. I think we only had three active cases in the previous financial year, and they were all completed. We can go to the next slide. For torture cases, the target was also increased from 80 to 139 in year one, year two, 140, and in year three, it increased also to 150. And for assault matters, the target was also increased from 2,000 to 2,500 for all three financial years. And for corruption matters, the target was maintained at 70% given the complexity of investigating such cases. So the target was maintained at 70%. And the number of investigations of other criminal and misconduct matters referred to in section 28.1H, the target was increased from 30 to 100 for the three financial years. And this is because we are also receiving a high number of cases that relates to GBV-related matters. And the next one is on offences referred to in Section 33 of the IPIT Act. The target was increased from 15 to 30 for the three financial years. We can go to the next slide. Still on Program 2, number of approved systemic corruption, the target was maintained at 1. This is also due to the low active cases that we have in our workload. And the new indicator, number of cell inspections, I've already alluded to this one. What I can add is that in year two, the target is increased to 135, and the third year is 144. And the two next indicators is percentage of dockets referred to the NPA within 30 days of sign off. And the next one is recommendations that are referred to subs and NPS within 30 days of being signed off, the target is maintained at 90% for both indicators. We can go to the next slide. For program three, there were no changes to the output indicators. No new indicator was introduced and all the existing were maintained. The only change is with regards to the target for the legal advice provided to the department within 30 working days. It was increased from 70% to 80% for the three financial years. We can move then to program four. We can move to program four. Okay, for program four, we now have a total of 10 output indicators. In the previous financial year, we had 8. There were 2 new indicators that were introduced. Percentage of subdisciplinary outcomes taken on review within 60 days of analysis. And the next one is percentage of NPA prosecution decisions taken on review within 60 days of analysis. This indicator, Chairperson, is about the outcomes, the final outcomes that we would have received from SAPS, where we are not in agreement with the outcome. We are now going to monitor the progress or the action that is taken to review the outcome that was received. Seems like we have lost the presentation, it's no longer reflected on my site, Chair.
Mr. Makolani? Sorry for that inconvenience. Mr. Makolani, we can't see the presentation.
Gershwin, are you able to assist?
Hi, right, Chair. Just finding the presentation. I'll flash it now.
Okay. Just remind us what slide number you're at, Mary Shafi.
I was on program four. I can't remember the slide number. You program can scroll down and to program four.
Program 1.
Yes, that's program 4. Thank you. You can move to the next slide. Thank you. Okay, the first indicator under program 4 is number of engagements held with key stakeholders. The target was increased from 166 to 180, and this is inclusive of community outreach events and the meetings with organs of state where we discuss matters of interest to IP's mandate and our services. And the next one is on number of media programs held per year. The target was increased from, it was maintained at 6 for the 3 financial years, and number of station lectures, awareness trainings conducted, it was also maintained at 40 for all 3 financial years. And for percentage of recommendations referred to SAPS and and MPS that are analyzed, together with percentage of criminal referrals forwarded to the NPA that are analyzed, the target is increased from 80% to 90% for the 3 financial years for both indicators. And the next one is on responses from SAPS and NPS that are analyzed. The target is increased from 70% to 80% for 3 financial years. On the next slide, responses received from the NPA that are analyzed. The target was also increased from 70% to 80%. And the next 2 indicators are the new indicators that I've alluded to, and the target is set at 90% for all 3 financial years. The last indicator is the implementation of access and awareness rural strategy, and the target is maintained at 60% for the 3 financial years. I think that brings me to the end of the presentation, Chair. Thank you, Edie.
Thank you, Mem Letlape. Just go down a bit. I can't see where it starts. Okay, that's the conclusion. Thank you. In conclusion, Chairperson and honorable members, we will continue to provide civilian secretary for police service the required support on the amendment of the IPT bill process. We will professionalize the investigation environment by enrolling our investigators on the AFC membership. We will employ contract workers to assist with the reduction of the backlog cases. So far, we are at the stage where interviews have been conducted. We will decrease the number of non-prosecute cases through employment of quality assurance. They've already started. Improve the prosecution rate. Collaborate with Stats SA to validate our stats. Continue to engage with the provincial departments of community safety in order to identify additional space, office space, in an effort to regionalize our services. Prioritize funding of key activities for the core program and ICT projects to ensure optimal service delivery. I think this is the end, Chairperson, and thank you.
You know, thank you very much to Executive Director, the CFO, and Mayor Letlape for that presentation. I think on members, we perhaps let the GM coming at the end. Maybe if you can give me an indication, it's time for us to interact with the presentation. If you have any comments and or questions that you would like to pose to the department. Honourable Bartlett, I have noted you for now. Honourable Maleka, Honourable Dlamini, perhaps in that order, can we then take the question for clarity and or comments? Honourable Bartlett?
Okay, sorry, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and please, can I have asked, we have load sharing. Is it possible just to take my video off? Is it fine, Chair?
No, it's fine, Honourable Bartlett. Please continue. I think many people are having challenges.
Okay. Chair, good morning to everybody, and good morning to the presenters and to all my colleagues, Chair. I just have three questions, Chairperson, to IPET. On slide 7, Chair, number 6, I just want to ask them what progress has been made in the expansion of the IPET footprint, and how is this benefiting provinces in terms of investigation? Are there any remaining challenges? And then on slide 19, there seems to be a focus on the ICT plan. Can you please give the committee more information pertaining to this plan and the policies moving forward? And then my last question, Chair, on IPET is on slide 9. The National Treasury has indicated that IPET is underspending its budget. Could they please give us more information on what the reasons are for this? Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Honourable Maleka, please unmute Honourable Maleka.
Oh, sorry, Chairperson, and thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members and the Deputy Minister and officials. Chairperson, I want to just raise your question on the IPIT budget and the APT on slide 6. Improvement of quality of investigations in particular, GBV cases, so what are the concrete steps that IPID will implement to ensure that investigations are improved? How will this be achieved with capacity constraints within the directorate? And on slide 24, Chairperson, the cell inspections, what informed the decision to include this indicator and can IPIT please give a more detailed explanation of the intention of including this indicator. And I want to go also to the CSPS budget. The
I think we're going to do that on Malay. We'll deal with CSPS when we get there, thanks.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Honorable Tlamini.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is to ask about a specific case in Mkondo where there was a service delivery protest and a 17-year-old was caught by a stray bullet. But when by a police officer, so the 17-year-old was shot by the police officer, and the family then asked for, of course, the information with regards to how the case is going. But the IPED couldn't give them a case number, and I want to know as to how does it really work when the police officer, in terms of service delivery, protest actions, and so in a scenario like that, what is the process then does the community take to hold then the police accountable, and the relationship between the community, IPED, and SAPS? Thank you very much. It's with that specific case. So I just want to know as to where is the progress? Where is the case now? If the Deputy Minister is probably aware of it. I'm saying this because the same week they went to Mkondo is when a councillor was shot and they were investigating. So the Deputy Minister and the Police Minister went to the municipality to pay their condolences, but didn't find the opportunity to do the same, which was in a different area, but the same municipality, to go pay condolences to the Msidi family. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lamini.
Thanks, Chair. Again, with the challenge of the network as well, I will switch off my phone, my video.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just one question, Chair. I just want to know the plan for IPED. As what plan do they have to ensure that they do centralize their offices, decentralize them, so that they cover more, so that people can have easily access in almost all provinces, and also not to operate within the SAP, to have their own standing offices where that will be well known to the community out there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mteto. Honorable Mikolaki.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Chairperson, my question relates to the budget itself. I cannot recall over the last 8-9 years where there was a single budget briefing where we did not indicate that in real terms IPED is becoming poorer and poorer. The budget increases by 4%. Inflation is at 7%. So in real terms, although the budget becomes slightly bigger, in real terms IPED can do less and less and less with the money that they are given. My question is to the Deputy Minister, and that is whether the department made any effort to speak to Treasury between the last time and the previous time and the time before that, where this committee did indicate that we are very worried about the budget decreasing in real terms. What has the Department of or the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Police done to engage with Treasury to ask them for an increase in the budget, although it wasn't given, or at least to try to indicate to Treasury what the consequences of this trajectory would be? I just want to know from the Deputy Minister, what have they done in the years since, and what was Treasury's response to their requests, if there were requests, that made Treasury not really paid heed to any of these requests? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable McLaughlin. Honourable Dodobo.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I'm sure you don't mind as well if I don't switch on my video because of load shedding. Honourable Chair, I want to reconcile the question that Honourable Bartlett and Honorable Mikalakis asked in relation to the budget. National Treasury says IPED, despite the financial constraints and the limited budget, it is underspending. While on the other hand, their presentation of what Honorable Michalakis is saying is that there is a need to increase the budget so that they are able to do their job. Now the question would be, why are they not spending even the little that they have? So that there must be a case that there is need for more funds. I'm asking this question because when I look at the budget itself, the IPID is spending about 65% to 70% of its budget on personnel, which means that 30% is left to spend for other things, and still they don't spend it in the way that they should do, that they should, to justify that there is a need to give them more money. I was looking at their report last year. It indicates, you know, high increases of police brutality, murder in custody, rape in custody, and these are the issues that they need to really follow up. And their presentation itself is saying, we lack capacity, our investigators are not enough, we are unable to complete all of our work because of the problem of the resources and the capacity. And for me, that is a problem, because IPID as an independent institution has got to make a huge impact in terms of ensuring that police brutality or any other act of corruption and all of that doesn't occur. And we need to protect this institution. We need to support it. We need to enhance its work so that it achieves its objectives. That's the first question, Honorable Chair. The second one, there is a discussion in the public domain about making IPID a Chapter 9 institution, which means it must be like all other Chapter 9 institutions, your public protector, Human Rights Commission, Commission on Gender, and all of that. Has this discussion started to unfold at the level of the IPID? If it is there, where is it? What trend is it taking? So that if it is happening, we should then know with a view of making some contribution to that particular discussion, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodovu. I think Honorable Members have, to a large extent, covered the issue of the understanding, and I think the department should perhaps also give us reasons as to why, even though Treasury would like to increase their budgets, they're not spending their budget sufficiently, and I think Treasury has also indicated that they don't have the necessary capacity. So perhaps the department needs to perhaps also give us further information around that. I would also just want to add a few questions to what has already been asked. The one is around whether there were any material losses through criminal conduct in the previous financial statements. And if so, has the department taken any reasonable measures to recover any material losses as a result of criminal conduct or any unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that occurred during the financial year? Secondly, given that IPID faces capacity in respect of investigations, maybe if you could give us an indication, what is your staff morale like, and what is being done by the department to improve staff morale? I think with regard to the case backlogs, what is being done to address the backlogs? And with regard to these backlogs, what number of cases are awaiting technical reports such as postmortems or DNA or ballistic histology and toxicology reports? I think on this question, I mean, if you don't have the information at hand, I mean, I suppose it could be provided to the committee in writing. Then in terms of your case management system being ineffective, what progress has been made in respect of the new case management system? And then just one question also in relation to the allocation of budgets. I know it has been clearly explained the reasons, the rationale you use for such allocations. But if we look at it, I think all budgets have increased to some extent. However, I think with the Western Cape, there was a decrease in the budget, and perhaps we could just get an explanation as to why. I think with that said, those would be. Just one more thing in terms of our previous engagements with IFES, where IFES reported that in terms of the MOU with the investigating directorate of the NPA, that IFES would investigate both IFES and non-IFES cases under the IDA's guidance. Maybe if you could provide us an update in this regard and the impact of this initiative on the quality of your investigations. That said, let me then hand over to yourself, Executive Director and or Deputy Minister. I hope the Minister's network is fine. DM, perhaps, I don't know if you want to come in now or would you rather come in after the IPUS response? I'm not sure, but let me hand over to yourself.
No, it's okay. Thanks, Chair. Let's allow the ED to lead the responses. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, DM. Executive Director, over to yourself and your team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, DM. I will first start with the questions raised by Member Butler. The progress on the expansion, are there any challenges? I must indicate that, Chairperson, our capacity is still limited. It's still at 397. What we are doing with what we can, especially with the limited resources. We have hired people on a contract basis just to assist in dealing with them with the challenges that we're experiencing. So the expansion strategy, it's a bit limited because it's controlled by the budget itself. So we would love, at one stage, the SLEF committee must give us a platform where we'll share with you our expansions and our proposed expansion strategy based on the challenges that we are having. So it will give us an opportunity to then interact on the expansion strategy that we have developed. ICT plans and policies, what are the challenges around that? Chairperson, I must indicate that we've been experiencing challenges with regards to the ICT, such that we have developed an action plan to deal with the ICT challenges. We've even went as far as engaging CETA to come on board and assist us. But we have also hired a director to also run with the ICT plans. She is working very closely with CETA, of course, with the support of our CFO, making sure that we implement the plan and improve our ICT environment. We've got aging infrastructure that needs a lot of money. Our GRPs we properly serviced because those were the findings in our AG report. And we have made sure that we develop policies to address some of the gaps or loopholes in ICT. Underspending of the budget and why. Chairperson, we want to acknowledge that when it came to our understanding was mainly around the compensation of employees. Chair and honourable members, we had serious challenges in the last financial year with regards to compensation of employees. If you look at our compensation of employees, we've had members leaving the institution where then the gap still opened. But the other challenge is when there was a delay in receiving some of the results, PSC results, because we have to screen people properly. And we must wait for the results to come back. And the other challenge is when people that were offered positions did not accept those positions, and we had to start afresh the process. So all those things have delayed the challenges. But what was one of the things that also delayed was where we picked up that in one post, when we were about to appoint a senior person, we realized that there was a challenge in terms of that candidate, because we had to get validation or clearance from the previous employer. We realized that there was a challenge around employing that person because of some disciplinary processes that that took place, and the person resigned. And those the proposed incumbent for the post resigned at his previous employer because of the challenges or the serious allegations that were made against him. So we had to wait with that position. So in this financial year, we're committing that we will definitely try by all means to fill those vacancies, because on a weekly basis, I'm sitting with the HR director and I'm making sure that we are monitoring the improvement on the vacancy rate. And the other thing is that we have also contracted Experian to assist us in making sure that we get our PSC results quicker than before, where we had to wait for other institutions to assist us with the PSC results. And then with regards to member Malika's question on the quality of investigation, what steps have we done to improve the quality of investigation? One, it's the employment of your quality assurers, who are assisting in reducing the number of non-prosecute cases, as well as withdrawal of cases. Two is to review some of the decisions taken by NPA, because sometimes we are of the opinion or we are of the view that the cases that we present to NPA have sufficient evidence to convict. We've had a meeting with NPA. They have shown us the discrepancies in terms of the quality of investigation, but we are committed to fix some of the challenges that they've raised with us, because some of them are minor. But there's also a delay in terms of the number of cases that we've already submitted to NPA in terms of conviction. There are so many cases on the court roll. But the other important thing is that our provincial heads are also active in making sure that the cases that are being investigated are of a quality nature. We, together with with our legal services, we are in the process of employing some court prep officers, so that when investigators go, before they go to present their cases to court, they have undergone a process. We have to make sure that they meet the criteria before they are submitted to court. So with the limited budget, we are intending that legal services must then get some court preparation officers who are going to work with our investigators, so that we should not get a challenge in terms of the quality of cases that we present to court. Fourthly, in terms of quality, we are in the process of enrolling our own investigators into the ACFE. ACFE is a body that has extensive training on fraud, on corruption, and other international practices that are going to be shared with our investigators. And where there are challenges, ACFE is going to come in and assist in making sure that they assist our investigators where they're encountering challenges, especially in the legal section. And then with regards to the cell inspection, why we've introduced this new indicator, Chair, I must indicate that we've had a challenge with regards to a death in police custody, especially in KZN, where we are experiencing some challenges with regards to the death in police custody. So we felt that it's important that we must just visit this prisoners or complainants that are in prison, just to check what is going on there. Are they being treated well? Are there any challenges with regards to some harassment, or are there any cases of torture in those cells? So when we go there, we are interviewing them and wanting to make sure that we get as much as possible. And police must realize that we are also monitoring those people who have been detained. But Chair, as we do our work in these cells, we are also partnering with the Human Rights Commission, because there is an a section where they're dealing with torture and assault, and we have to comply with the UN on torture and assault. So they consistently want some reports from the department with regards to cell inspection. And then member Lamin also raised an issue around the Mkhondo case. I would like to request that I be given an opportunity to go back and check what is happening with regards to this case that he has raised. But I must indicate that, Chair, we are strengthening our relationship with communities. We are in the process of meeting your community policing forums to become so that they can become ambassadors of IPIT with regards to engaging communities on the services that IPIT is rendering to communities. And we are also making sure that our own communities are able to have access through the CPF, and CPF are reporting the cases to IPIT through CPF. So it's important that we strengthen that. But I'm committing that we will be giving member Zamin feedback on this case, just to say, where are we in terms of this investigation? What is the challenge, if there are any challenges on this case? And then Member Mtepa raised an issue around the decentralization of offices. I must indicate to Member Mtepa that we've got 9 provincial offices. But in addition to that, we realize that we still need to go according to the DTM model, that is the district model, where we are requesting a Department of Community Safety to share with us their office space in their regions. Because we realize that when we work in regions, we're able to access communities, and communities are aware of our services. And this will also assist us in improving our own service delivery. So we're not working with SAPS. We're not stationed in SAPS offices. We are stationed in our own offices in provinces. We're also stationed in some of the regions. We're stationed in the Department of Community Safety, Department of Community Safety offices. With regards to Member Mikalakis, I think he was asking the DM on whether there was an engagement with a national treasury on the limited budget. I will leave that to the DM to respond to that. And then Member Dodovi also asked about the underspending. The emphasis is around the compensation of employees. I've already outlined the challenges that we were experiencing with regards to to underspending on compensation of employees, but we are committing that in this financial year we will definitely strive to fill all the positions that we are currently having in the institution. And then we are also going to be developing some kind of a retention strategy to see if we cannot retain some of our members. But I must also indicate to the House that most of the people who are leaving IPIT are mainly admin people. Our investigators are not, most of them are not living, but we are trying to create a conducive environment for them to operate in IPIT. And then there's also a discussion around making IPIT a Chapter 9 institution. Yes, Chair, we've seen that discussion unfolding somewhere else outside the department, but I must indicate that, Chair, there's an IPIT amendment bill that is in place that is still under a discussion. We are busy on the IPIT amendment bill. I would request that the members, the committee members also engage the Department of the Civilian Secretariat to then make some inputs to the bill, because that's the only way that we'll be able to make IPIT independent so that it operates without any fear or favor. And probably National Treasury, once we are a standalone, will be able to support or give us more budget to effectively discharge our oversight role. A chairperson also spoke about the material losses. Are there any, with regards to any unauthorized or fruitless expenditure? I request that the CFO talks to that after I'm done. The morale in the institution, chairperson, I must acknowledge that the morale is very low, but we are working very hard to ensure that we improve. One of the challenges that were raised by members of by staff members was around upward mobility in the institution. Chairperson, we've started to advertise our post internally so that we can also give them an opportunity to compete internally and occupy some of the occupy some of the positions. There are positions. The HR director can even give more information to say today. Today, when we, after we've started with this process of ensuring that we also get our people on board in terms of occupying or promotions. Where are we? But I must indicate that I'm happy at the pace at which we are moving, because people are now starting to apply internally, and people some of them are already being appointed internally. And then the chair also spoke about the impact of our MOU with IT on cases. I must say that we are working very closely with IT. I'm not seeing any challenges unless there is some. To date, we have seconded three of our investigators. We've also had our chief director being absorbed by IT to assist IT. So there is that working relationship as far as I'm concerned. The backlog, what are we doing to deal with the backlog? Are there any challenges around the autopsy report and all that? Chairperson, we are in the process of hiring retired detectives to assist us in improving our backlog. Yes, we acknowledge that there is a challenge around the backlog. As part of our backlog strategy, we are in the process of employing five contract workers to assist us in reducing the backlog of cases. With regards to the autopsy reports by SAPS, technical reports, Chairperson, I must indicate that SAPS is fully on board. They are giving us support. The forensic unit in SAPS is working very closely with SAPS, and their turnaround time of submitting reports to IPID on technical reports has improved in the last, since the last financial year, after we've robustly engage them on the matter. The progress on the CMS, whether can't we do anything around improving the CMS? Chairperson, the current CMS is a problem, I must say. And I must indicate to you that the CMS that we are currently having, it's an open-ended, it has an open-ended contract such that the National Treasury has a finding around this CMS. They want us to then go to the market, make this company to also compete with other companies on the market. So that's why you see us wanting to move to another to advertising the CMS that is current, that we need as a department, and we must make sure that we get a proper CMS. The more we work on the current one, there are flaws. And I must indicate that, Chairperson, we realize that some of our investigators have difficulties in working on the current CMS, such that there's a delay in terms of uploading cases. Sometimes they are unable to do that. And there's a lot of work that needs to happen in terms of giving more information into the CMS itself. Now, we're trying to come up with a modified CMS that is going to assist in regulating how we want to upload our cases and make sure that the system that we have must be able to be adaptable to connecting other systems such as your care system, as well as your the justice system that I spoke about. And the current system, Chairperson, we are not in control. The current system is controlled by the service provider. Now we want our own system where ICT will be able to control that system, where we are proud that we are owners of that system. The system currently is with the outside person, and that system has been there since the ICD time. So it's about time that we move with time and get a system that is going to work work for IP. The rationale on the budget decrease for Western Cape, I'll request that CFO must then come in so that he can give more explanation on budget decrease and also the challenges around the budget. With your permission, of course, Chairperson, can I allow the CFO to come in? Thank you.
CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Edith. Let me go back to the question that was raised by
by Honorable Bartlett, which was also amplified by Honorable Dodo, National Treasurer's report on our understanding. Maybe let me clarify the issue. The National Treasury's issue is related to compensation of employees, where we could not spend our entire budget. As I indicated earlier on during my presentation, for the financial year that has just passed, out of the budget of 363 million, we were able to spend 359 million of it. Only 4.5 million we could not spend within compensation for employees, which is 1%, only 1%
of our budget. And mainly because of the vacancy, that positions that we could not fill. And it has already alluded to the challenges.
Among those challenges,
Chairman has spoken about the MOU with
IT.
We are having a relation, working relationship with IT. On the prosecutorial less trending cases. And as a result of that process, we had to second about five of our investigators, including chief investigators, investigating officers, with the view of having contract workers while our colleagues are assisting ID. However, when we try to recruit contract workers for the period of 24 months of that secondment period, unfortunately, the response was very poor. And while we were trying to finalize that process, the financial year was moving. And as a result, we could not fill those positions on the contract base because of the nature of our business, which is investigations. It's not easy to attract investigators on contract basis. So
that process, it led to the underspending in
compensation of employees, which is
1% that I just indicated. So our budget was overspent
by only 1%. And hence, earlier on in one of my presentation slides, I indicated that for the previous financial
year, which is
2022-23, we have spent 99% of our budget. So maybe I think we just have to clarify
that the National Treasury's concern is not about the overall budget, it is
about the specific economic classification within our budget. And then with regards to other issue that was raised related to National Treasury, I know the question was pointed to the minister, to the deputy minister, excuse me, Chairperson. But I think Honorable Mr. Faith wanted us to also confirm if we've been communicating with National Treasury on the additional budget. Yes, indeed, we have been presenting our additional budget request during the MPS period. Amongst other
things that we have developed,
what we call expansion strategy, which was developed, quantified, and presented to National Treasury among other role players that we have presented to. And that expansion strategy explained our intention to expand
our footprints in
various provinces, the required resources, including the tools of trade for investigators. So we were very clear in terms of how much is required, and that expansion strategy do exist. If the committee wants a presentation on that, we can look at that and give you a presentation on our expansion strategy. And if you want,
that we've been sharing with National Treasury throughout the year since 2017-2019
financial year. And then with regard to the question that was raised by Honorable Chairperson regarding the material loss, Chairperson, for the year that you have mentioned, 22-23 financial year, we did not incur any material loss due to criminality or any acts. There was no unauthorized expenditure incurred. There was no irregular expenditure incurred. We only incurred a fruitless expenditure of about 10,000 rand due to the interest that was charged on Telkom account. The cases have been referred to Financial Misconduct Committee for further investigation and determine the affected official so that appropriate action can be taken in order to recover that 10,000 in various transactions. Chair, one of your questions was with regard to the budget decrease on the Western Cape. Chair, as I've indicated earlier on, we do what we normally call a zero-based budget because of our limited resources. Every year, when we compile our budget, we start from the scratch. We don't just use the implementer because if we look at activities on hand, we allow each and every provincial head to make their presentations on the activities that will be taking place and how are they going to contribute to the broader mandate of IPID. And one of the issue that came out during the budget allocation was the significant decline of overtime payment. We realized that Western Cape was one of those programs that was incurring high expenditure as far as overtime is concerned. And
last financial year towards the end, I think 4 months before the end of the financial year, we
started an exercise
why
was it in case, and we realized that there are hours that are worked by investigators, which are supposed to be worked during the normal hours. But they take matters that should have been done during working hours, and they deal with them after hours. And we made it clear to the management of the province that it's not in line with our overtime policy. Therefore, the overtime amounts will have to be decreased so that only overtime hours can be accommodated in the expenditure that we are reporting to. So as a result, we had to reduce that budget of overtime, which we have agreed with the provincial management, and it has affected the overall allocation. But we also looked into other areas that they have presented to us for allocation of budget, which they've also agreed that the budget will assist them. Even though, as I indicated, the allocation is not enough, not only to Western Cape, to all the provinces, but we just have to work with what we have. I think that was the last question that required my presentation. Thanks.
Thanks, CFO. Chair, just the last person, I've requested the director, HRM, just to give some input on the on the vacancies. With your permission, of course, Chair.
If you can, I'm not sure whether you also dealt with the question asked by, was it Honorable Maleka with regard to the two new indicators on slide 27. I don't know if you dealt with it. Maybe you did and I missed it, but it was around the percentage of NPA prosecution decisions that such discipline outcomes that are taken under review. And the question also related to the target of 90%. Why is it 90% not higher? I'm not sure if we dealt with that question, but if you could also deal with that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. Let me allow the director, director HR, to come in, and then we'll be followed by the director strategy on the current questions, the questions that we're asking. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, director.
Good morning, Edi. Morning, honorable members. Thank you very much. I'm going to touch to start with the issue also, Edi, to add on the question of the staff morale, on exactly what have we done as a department to improve the staff morale. Additionally to what the ED has indicated with regards to the advertisement of positions, the executive director gave direction. We had a investigation in Durban, which we had this year in March, where we had to gather all investigators in one room and be able to give them an opportunity to express their concerns. regarding any issues that are related to communication and over and above conditions of service. And a report was drafted, and there was a task team identified within the investigators who are currently representing the needs of each and every province. And that task team, the executive director, has also identified senior managers within the department that are able now to engage with investigators at the ground level so that management can understand their concerns relating to conditions of service, and most importantly, how can we improve the conditions of service within the investigators' environment so that it can assist with the retention of staff over and above the salary payment that we are currently paying them on parity with the salary levels that are for detectives in SAPS. And that also has contributed a lot with regards to the staff morale, because they are appreciating the efforts made, and they are also having a platform to even engage the executive director at their level on issues that may require her urgent attention. Also to add on what the executive director has indicated, and also to the CFO with regards to the non-spending of compensation, is to add that also as a department working within the limited resources, we had to make or take strategic decisions. As management, between the period of 2021 overlapping to 2022, we had to go through our current resources, which even though they are limited, honorable members, we had to reprioritize positions within the department. We had to regroup functions for optimal utilization of resources. And that process on its own requires the Department of Public Service Administration to concur to any changes that we also embark on our organizational structure. That also delayed a bit on the process, because we had to put certain positions on hold and did not embark on the recruitment process until we can address the optimal utilization of resources. Instead of advertising a position for the sake of advertising, we regroup and reprioritize key positions, which currently even in provinces, we're able to even reprioritize and identify 5 investigators that will assist with case intake in the key provinces. And as we speak to date, we have filled those positions to capacitate the provinces. Yes, and indeed, the ED has raised also element of promotions within the department. Yes, indeed, within the process of recruitment that we started, which was in October last year, including up to date this year, we were able to make close to 26 appointments that are within the environment through this appointment of staff. And also on contract, as she has alluded, we already have contract positions, but promotions within the department, we were able to promote 11 staff members within IPID. And that also was part of addressing the issues of retention of staff and also recognizing the staff within IPID. Edie, thank you very much. I wanted to add on that part of the staff morale, as well as the process that we followed that resulted in the delay in spending on compensation, which is reprioritizing, and is one exercise that we are currently as part of the strategy working on, even in the 23-24. We have reprioritized positions in also enhancing the OHS environment, as well as the security management environment, as the ED has alluded on the issues of myths, so that we can elevate it to a director level to be strategic in the department. And those processes have been finalized, and we are awaiting approval of the structure in order to address the human resource capacity in our department. Thank you, honorable members, Chairperson, and thank you, Edie.
Thank you, Ms. Palachi. The last one on the target, Mem Letlape, as Director of Strategy. Over to you.
Thank you, Edie. Thank you, Chair. With regards to the targets for the new indicators that we introduced under Program 4, the subdisciplinary outcomes taken on review within 60 days and NPA prosecution decisions taken on review within 60 days of analysis. The reason why the target was set at 90% and not 100% is because, with particular reference to the subs, that we are cognizant of the fact that for a matter to be taken for review, there is information that will be required to for the analysis purposes by the respective provincial heads and the investigating officer. And there might also be a need to request information from the relevant stakeholders, and taking that into account that the cases are not the same, and also that might have an impact on them being able to complete the analysis and submitting their representation within the 60 days. So what we are aiming to achieve is that out of all the matters that would have been taken, or a decision would have been taken to take them for review, let us ensure that at least 90% of those, they are referred within 60 days. But with the remaining, we are still going to submit them for review, but the turnaround time that we are aiming to comply with is 60 days. And the target, hence, is set at 90% to give provision to those ordinarily circumstances where there might also be a delay from the stakeholders that must give us information, like with yourself. If there is information that we might need from the chairpersons that would have been heading the disciplinary hearings, that we don't have control over. So we had to take those dependencies into consideration when we set our targets. But all matters where we are not in agreement with the outcomes, they will be referred back for review. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're done.
Thank you very much, Eddie. DM, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm comfortable with the responses, unless there is a matter that I might have missed in the process. Thank you, Chair.
DM, there's just an issue with regard to the budget engagement with Treasury to increase budgets for the ICED. I know we dealt with all the other issues as to why Treasury is not doing that from the side of the executive. And also with regard to Honourable Dlamini's question, the case in Mkondo, while the IPED will provide, will investigate and then provide us with the relevant information, whether you're aware of that incident. Over to you, DM.
No, thanks. With regard to engagement with Treasury within the broader resources that we need in the space, we are having those engagements, Chair. The budget both for IPED as the civilian secretariat and SAPS, it's a subject that we are seized with National Treasury, because we believe if it can be increased, it will assist us greatly. So we are attending to that. The case in question, I think I'll have to verify my facts around that. I'm not sure whether I fully have information regarding that, so I don't want to speculate. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much, DM. On members, those are the responses. If there's a burning follow-up, on members, give me an indication, because I don't see any hands that have been raised. Okay, I think members are relatively comfortable with what has been presented and responded to. Let me thank the department or the directorate for the presentation and its interaction with the committee. And I think we should encourage the directorate to continue the work they do and to ensure that it has a footprint in each province, that the capacity constraints in respect of investigations is improved, and that the case backlogs are worked on tirelessly to ensure that the department is completely functional. We hope that the directorate is able to demonstrate to the Department of the Treasury in terms of their capacity to utilize funds and to spend their budget going forward. As is the case with our budget agencies and engagement with the various departments and entities, this process will culminate in a policy debate in the NDOP. Once again, thank you very much, DM and the Directorate, IPED, for this engagement. I think we're going to, we are relatively low on time, so we're going to move then to the budget and APP with regard to the CSPS. Our members, the CSPS being also another oversight body, which provides, amongst others, police advisory services to the Minister of Police, including drafting related legislation on various policing aspects, and monitoring the implementation of the South African Police Services in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, and recommendations made by the IPED, as well as the recommendations made by the IPED. Our members, the CSPS has a key role to reduce violent crime through the promotion of a more active citizenry and the establishment of a new social compact. Let us welcome the CSPS to the committee, and let me hand over to yourself, DM, first, and then to the CSPS to make the necessary input on the budget and APP. DM, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. I think the problem of load shedding is making things very difficult. I will then request through you to allow the acting secretary who's leading the team, Mr. Amaru, to lead in the presentation, Chair, through you, if you allow.
Thank you very much, DM. Acting secretary. Mr. Amaru.
Thank you. If he has difficulties with his network, Chair, we can allow a request E2 or any of the executives that are there with the secretary or who are connected on the platform.
Yeah, I see Mr. Romero is on, but his mic is open, but he's not hearing anything.
It's the problem of connectivity, HR. If we can just ask Edu or someone in the team who is better connected to proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
That's fine. Thanks, DM. Please proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Acting Secretary and colleagues. All protocol observed. Apologies on behalf of Mr. Ramaru. He had indicated about 30 minutes ago that there was load shedding in his area, so I'm assuming that's why he's having those challenges. Chairperson, with respect to our APP and budget allocation for 2023-2024, I will go straight into, with your permission, the overview of our budget and MTF estimates. So, Chairperson and Honourable Members, you will note that we've been allocated a total of 150.4 million for the current financial year, and this is a 1.2% decrease from the 152.3 million adjusted appropriation that we had in the previous financial year. And then with respect to all of our core programs, including administration, Chairperson, there's been a noticeable decrease in all those programs by approximately 1%, with the exception of our intersectoral coordination and strategic partnerships unit, which sees a decrease of 2.5% in their allocation. And then in terms of our goods and services, Chairperson, we have 39.8 million allocated for goods and services for this financial year. And then again, with compensation of employees, there's a noticeable decrease in our COE budget of about 2 million in relation to the allocation that we had in the previous financial year. So we now have 105.1 million as opposed to the 107.2 million that we had in the previous financial year. We do, however, note, Chairperson, that over the MTEF period in the outer years, we do see a recovery whereby there will be approximately a 2.6% increase on average towards the end of the outer years, the 2025-2026 financial year, where we see our budget increase to an annual estimated budget of about 164.2 million over the three-year period. Thank you, Chair. So with respect to our mandate, our the institutional policies and strategies governing the five-year period and the relevant court rulings, Chair. So this is from slide three, slide three to five. Nothing has really changed in this regard, so I'm going to go straight to slide six, which speaks to our strategic focus. Chair, so our planning orientation in the department is, of course, informed by the priorities of government. This includes the recommendations outlined in Chapter 12 of the NDP, the Priority 6 of the MTSF, which speaks to social cohesion and safer communities. We are also guided by the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, specifically with Chapters 2 and 3 of the National Strategic Plan. We are guided by the presidential pronouncements made in the State of the Nation Address and other frameworks of government. We are also guided by the priorities that are pronounced by the Minister of Police, who of late has been vocal about improving station-level accountability and policing. He's been vocal and emphasizing the need to reduce the DNA backlog and also empower community policing forums to enable them to play their role. This is also in line with the pronouncement that was made by the President in this year's SONA address. With the approval, Chairperson, of the Integrated Crime and Violence Prevention Strategy by Cabinet in March last year, our Minister has also placed emphasis on the need for us to focus on facilitating implementation in this regard. So this has translated into one of our key outputs for the current financial year. Furthermore, Chairperson and members, the priorities of the JCPS cluster are also very central to the work that we do. And some of the focal areas that have been identified by the cluster for this current financial year include restoring law and order in communities, facilitating legislative and constitutional reform in order to strengthen the criminal justice system and value chain, and also addressing the impact of the socioeconomic challenges on safety and security. Chair, I am now on slide seven. In terms of our key achievements of the previous financial year. So Chair, in terms of the outcomes as articulated in our five-year strategic plan, we have achieved both of our MTSF targets well ahead of the end of the five-year period, Chairperson. These were also key outcomes in our strategic plan. So this includes the finalization and approval of the Integrated Crime and Violence Prevention Strategy, which I also already mentioned. And we also concluded a perception study, Chairperson, which is in line with the interventions in the MTSF on the need to assess the experiences of the public on the quality of services rendered by the police. So the survey focused on police visibility in the top 30 police stations and the percentage of victims that were satisfied with their interaction with the police. In terms of our outputs for the 2022-2023 financial year, I will mention just a few in terms of our key achievements. We have developed the second draft of the National Policing Policy, which is a key policy instrument that provides direction to responding to the current policing challenges in the country. We've continued to facilitate training to CPFs in various district municipalities across the country, Chair. With respect to our monitoring and evaluation, we concluded a study on the monitoring of the SAPS 13 or exhibit stores, focusing, of course, on the top 30 police stations nationally and provincially. And we also did a report on the assessment of SAPS members' perception on their accessibility and usability of the employee health and wellness program. And the recommendations thereof were forwarded to SAPS for further action. Chair, I'm now on slide, I'm not sure what slide number it is, Chair. My apologies, I can't see the slide numbers on my system. But the slide reflecting the factors contributing to the performance of policy. So during our strategic planning process, Chair, we zoomed into some of the developmental challenges that contribute to the performance and effectiveness of policing policy, taking into account, of course, their direct and indirect impact on crime and criminality, law enforcement, and by extension, oversight over law enforcement. And we note that these factors, Chair, they present a number of complexities for policing, given that with respect to these challenges, such as service delivery failures that other clusters are unable to resolve, these ultimately become challenges that fall squarely at the feet of policing or the police. So with respect to social discontent, we see that this is a key factor in the persistence of personal and the pervasiveness of personal and social crime, and then this is expressed as service delivery protests. We also see the rise of opportunistic crimes that occur during periods of load shedding, Chairperson. So the energy crisis also, by extension, has an impact on policing. And notwithstanding the complexity presented by these challenges, Chair, they also present for us an opportunity through the ICVPS, the National Policing Policy, and other policy instruments for us to assist the police to formulate targeted interventions to address crime related to these challenges. So, Chair, we acknowledge that in order to successfully execute our oversight mandate, we need to have an appreciation and acute an understanding of policing priorities and the changing dynamics that underpin these priorities, Chair. So during our planning session or planning process, rather, we invited the police to come and make an input into our plans. And that is where they indicated that in order for them to enhance, in order for them to achieve their mandate, rather, they are focusing on, amongst others, the enhancing of police visibility, improving basic standards of service delivery at frontline service points, and also the thorough response and responsive investigation of crime as some of their key priority focus areas towards the reduction of crime. They have also alluded to the development of a national policing strategy, Chair, which has a total of 6 focus areas, each with clear deliverables that respond to threats in relation to the territorial integrity of the state, the authority of the state, the prevention and investigation of crime that threatens the economy and also threatens the well-being of our citizens, enhancing stakeholder management and active citizenry, and capacitating SAPs to effectively fulfill their mandate. They also identified, Chair, 4 areas wherein they felt that CSP could play a key role in supporting their APP. And we've taken these into account in terms of planned performance for the current financial year. This includes the participating in the review of the District 1 plans for the district development model. We are already doing an assessment in terms of the GVV desks and the state of victim-friendly rooms in police stations through our monitoring tools. We already spoke about facilitating implementation of the ICVPS, and we continue to also collaborate with the police in terms of monitoring the outcomes of the Ministerial Crime Retreat Matrix or Program of Action. Chair, by the direction of the Minister during our planning process, our priorities for the medium term remain relevant and unchanged, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on this slide. Chair, so with respect to our performance, this slide seeks merely just to provide a line of sight to the committee in terms of our predetermined objectives and the levels of performance since the start of the 5-year period to date, Chair. So you will notice in terms of our targets or predetermined objectives, Chair, that there's been a gradual improvement and recovery in terms of the number of predetermined objectives post the decline that we saw during the COVID years, when all departments had to reprioritize their budgets and strategies to address the challenges of the time. And then we've also worked to maintain our performance levels in this regard well above 80%, while striving, of course, towards achieving 100% of our planned targets. And you will see a notice as well in terms of the breakdown of expenditure. Chair, we have managed to maintain our expenditure also in line with what we have targeted. So we've targeted to spend 98%, or we project that we spend 98% of our budget, allocated budget, to fulfill these predetermined objectives, and we have maintained this over the medium term. So, Chair, with this APP, we have sought to achieve also greater alignment between our planned outputs and outcomes, as articulated in our revised strategic plan, using the emergence theory of change that we appraised the committee on in the previous financial year as a point of reference. So, Chair, I'm now just going to briefly talk to our performance measures in our APP for 2023-2024. In terms of Program 1, Chair, last year we indicated to the committee that it is necessary for us to have a mechanism in place to ensure that SAPS implements our recommendations in a similar fashion that they implement IPED recommendations. And we are happy to report that our work in this regard has commenced. We're embarking on a process of developing a database that consolidates all the recommendations that we've made to SAPS through our policy instruments, our research and M&E reports. And the database will also form an integral part of the process to enhance the role of oversight on improving policing. This is also one of the key deliverables in the ICVPS in terms of the implementation thereof by the CSP. And then additionally, we will also institutionalize the implementation of the ICVPS in the department by ensuring that all the activities that each program undertakes correlates with the role of the department as articulated in the strategy, Chair. And then in this financial year, we're going to produce two reports on the role of the CSP in facilitating implementation of the ICVPS. So these two outputs are also adding to the increase in terms of our predetermined objectives from 28 to 30. Chair, with respect to, I'm still on Program 1 administration. We continue with efforts to maintain our vacancy rate and at an acceptable level in line with public service prescripts. So we've set a target of maintaining the vacancy rate at 10% or lower. We also continue with the rolling five-year implementation plans of our two key strategies, which assist us in enhancing operational efficiencies in the department, Chair. So this is with respect to the human capital strategy and the ICT strategy. And these strategies are key also to the implementation or effective implementation, rather, of our organizational strategy. With respect to financial administration, Chair, on the 30-day payments with creditors, the plan is to maintain 100% payments of invoices from creditors within 30 days by instituting and maintaining appropriate internal controls that we've put in place. And we will also continue to monitor expenditure against our cash flow projections as a department and monitor the trends in terms of expenditure in relation to our planned outputs, as I had indicated in the previous breakdown. So, Chair, I'm now on Program 2, Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. So the focus for Program 2, Chair, will be on the implementation of the approved partnership strategy and framework, which we had appraised the committee on in the previous financial year. And these have been translated into these outputs for Program 2 for the financial year, which includes the establishment of partnerships through MOUs. So in this regard, we are going to sign agreements with key stakeholders to collaborate on crime prevention initiatives. The targets in this regard are two signed MOUs. And then we will also look at the development of implementation plans for those MOUs that were signed in previous financial years in order for us to be able to assess and determine impact on the ground. We continue with the capacity building workshops and the assessment of community safety, the functionality of community safety forums in provinces and municipalities. And then we also continue with our anti-crime campaigns, Chairperson, focusing on campaigns with regard to gender-based violence, campaigns in schools and institutions of higher learning, and campaigns on, amongst others, responsible alcohol trade in communities, as we know that alcohol consumption is a key contributor to the pervasiveness of crime in communities. Chair, we are continuing also with assessing functionality of the community policing forums in line with the CPF regulations and our approved community policing policy. And then we aim to also conduct training workshops in provinces with CPFs, the aim of which is to equip them with, or rather empower them to support policing and crime prevention as they undertake their role in community. So the training is in line with the MOU that we've signed with Wits University and SASCITA. Chairperson, we continue also to support ministers' public participation program with our EasyMvizos, and which provide a platform for dialogue on the priority areas that have been identified by the minister. And then we are saying in this financial year, Chairperson, that for every EasyMvizo that takes place, we will develop response plans as a mechanism to provide feedback to communities on the issues that have been raised in these platforms. Chair, I am now on program three, which is legislation and policy development. So with respect to policy development, Chairperson, the national policing policy in this financial year, we will be focusing on finalizing the consultations across provinces and also gazetting the policing policy for public comments. And then in terms of the joint research project, Chairperson, there was a question that the committee asked in terms of whether we've conducted an impact assessment on our services to communities and the outcomes thereof. So that's something that we're going to do in this financial year, Chairperson, where we will be doing a perception study on the effectiveness of community outreach programs in improving community policing relations. So we'll be looking at EasyMvizos and the public participation programs that we participate in to determine the level of satisfaction by communities in this regard. And then with respect to the implementation of our knowledge management strategy check, this will be done in support of an integrated knowledge-based approach towards crime and violence prevention. And this is in line with one of our key deliverables as a department as per the ICVPS. Chair, with respect to our legislation, we continue with work on key bills in terms of drafting and processing bills. The focus for this financial year, Chairperson, is the IPED Amendment Bill, and we envisage that currently it's undergoing a processes of the JCPS cluster to seek the endorsement of the JCPS cluster to process the bill for to cabinet. So we envisage that this bill will be at an advanced stage and hopefully introduced into parliament by the end of this financial year. Chair, I'm now on program four, civilian oversight, monitoring and evaluation. Chair, so with respect to our police oversight initiatives, the program will be conducting a five-year census project, which seeks to collect data across all the police stations in the country, Chairperson, to determine the levels of improvement in terms of the key information that was collected in the previous five-year census in 2017-18. And then we also continue, as I indicated, with monitoring the implementation of the crime retreat matrix recommendations or the minister's program of action. And then, Chair, with respect to the budget and performance assessment, the complaints management and the IPED recommendations, these are all continuing in line with our mandate as per the Civilian Secretariat Act. Chair, lastly, with the assessment of SAPS programs, in this financial year, we will be conducting an assessment on the effectiveness of the fleet management program at station level. This is in line with one of Minister's priorities, as I indicated, to improve station level policing and accountability. And then on the evaluations, Chairperson, we will be evaluating the management and functionality of the 10111 centres or the rapid response centres. This is specifically to address the presidential pronouncement on improving the functionality of these centers. Chairperson, I am now on part two, the second part of our presentation, which speaks to information with respect to provincial secretariats. So, Chair, the mandate in terms of the provincial secretariats is clearly articulated in our Act, and once they've been established, they are required to support our mandate by, amongst others, conducting oversight visits to police stations to monitor police performance and police conduct. They are required to investigate complaints against the police. I indicated that we conduct joint research projects with them, and then they're also required to undertake crime prevention initiatives in their respective provinces. Chair, so the committee also requested an update in terms of provincial budget allocations. The table before you, Chairperson, provides a comparison in this regard in terms of the allocations of the different provinces between the previous financial year and the current. And there are some noticeable disparities, Chairperson, as you will see in these allocations tabulated here, where we see the Gauteng province and Western Cape province having significantly larger portions of the pie. And the impact thereof can be seen in relation to the implementation of some of the innovative practices that these provinces have been able to do in order to contribute to community safety. Because, of course, the more you have, the more you are able to do. We see Eastern Cape having the least amount allocated in terms of civilian oversight programs. So they only have a total of 752,000 to deal with issues of police station monitoring, the court watch brief program, and other oversight initiatives. Chair, with respect to the key provincial achievements and challenges, with the achievements, Chairperson, so even prior to the President emphasizing the need for us to enhance the functionality of the CPFs, all provinces have been working to improve relations between the police and communities through strengthening the capacity of the CPFs, as this has remained a key priority for our sector over the medium term. And then in terms of oversight, we've adopted, or the provinces rather, in collaboration with ourselves, have adopted a court watch brief program with specific focus on cases in relation to GBV. And we've seen that this has yielded some good results in certain instances. So for example, in the Eastern Cape, a total of 112 court cases have been re-enrolled by the end of the previous financial year. And 124 cases from April to December 20, that's supposed to read 2022, my apologies, Chair, which gives a total of 236 cases which have been re-enrolled as they were previously withdrawn. Chair, and then with respect to our challenges, the pervasive challenge, of course, of insufficient resources has a direct impact on the ability of provinces to, one, employ sufficient capacity in terms of human resources to carry out the oversight function more broadly, and two, effectively implementing both joint and province-focused programs towards crime prevention, as you notice with the disparities in the provincial budget allocation. Chairperson, of course, this also similarly applies to the budgets for monitoring compliance with the Domestic Violence Act, where we see that out of the nine provinces, only Gauteng has a ring-fenced budget to deal specifically with GBV, with a total of, I think it's 60 million to deal with GBV-focused programs. So, Chair, Section 6 of our Act provides us with the mandate to monitor SAFSA's compliance with the Domestic Violence Act, as you mentioned in your introduction. And we do this using a monitoring tool that we administer during our oversight visits. So the table below just indicates the outcomes of the assessments that we've done in the previous financial year. So during the period under review, we conducted oversight over a total number of 461 stations. And of those 461 stations, 38 of those were found to be non-compliant with the DVA. 286 were partially compliant, and about 137 of those were found to be significantly compliant. And what we found interesting was that none of these were found to be fully compliant with respect to the requirements of the tool. So the tool checks whether the inspections are conducted and how frequently these inspections are conducted, the availability of documents in the community service centers. We also check the record keeping with specific focus on maintaining the registers and filing of DV forms and protection orders, and the accessibility and functionality of the victim-friendly rooms, and of late also the GBV desks. So Chair, with respect to addressing instances of non-compliance, we have established a compliance forum between ourselves and SAPS, both at a national and provincial level. And these compliance forums take the form of accountability sessions. We convene on a quarterly basis to report on and address those areas of non-compliance. Additionally, we require police stations that have been identified as non-compliant to develop improvement plans, with which we monitor these continuously. And then we undertake capacity building workshops regularly with the DV coordinators, supported by provinces, to improve the levels of understanding of the DVA and the relevant national instruction. Chair, with respect to monitoring SAPS's implementation of IPED recommendations, there are a number of institutional mechanisms that we've put in place to assist with the coordination thereof. The first one is, of course, the legislated consultative forum, which seeks to promote policy coordination between ourselves and IPED at a national level. And then we also have the IPED recommendations forum, which meets regularly to verify information in relation to the recommendations, to identify and address discrepancies in the statistics that we have, and also monitor progress with respect to the agreed interventions in this regard. Chair and members, as you are aware, we also produce biannual reports or monitoring reports on the implementation of the IPED recommendations. This is in line with our Act. And this slide provides a graphical representation of the analysis of the most recent report. So the trend here, Chairperson, shows that there is at least a consistent improvement. You'll see there was the initiated cases in the initiation rate, rather, by SAPS. In the previous financial year, or the previous report indicated a total of 726 cases that were initiated within 30 days. And then the period under review, we have 782 cases that are initiated. So this shows that there is an upward trajectory in terms of the levels of compliance, or the situation is improving. Chair, I won't go into detail in terms of the measures to address non-compliance, as we have previously appraised the committee on these. I mentioned the institutional mechanisms as well that we have in place to assist with improving levels of compliance. Chair, similarly with this slide in terms of giving effect to the government priority of fighting gender-based violence, we have already mentioned the measures that we've put in place in earlier slides, and the fact that our budget and the budget of provincial secretariats have catered for these programs as part of the funds allocated for monitoring and evaluation and crime prevention, focusing on GBF. I also indicated that Gauteng has its own ring-fenced budget focusing on GBV initiatives. Chair, I'm now on slide 32. So in line, this is with respect to the efficacy of the forensic science laboratories, which was another question that the committee posed to us. So in line with its mandate, the DNA board continues to conduct oversight visits to these labs. So in the period under review, the board and its secretariat conducted visits to three regional labs in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape and KZN, and also one in the national headquarters in Pretoria. And this was aimed at assessing the effectiveness of the labs, focusing specifically on human and resource capacity issues, gaps and challenges with respect to supply chain management processes, technological issues, which all have an impact in terms of the throughput of the labs, And some of the challenges that have been identified, Chairperson, include the inadequate and aging infrastructure in terms of some of these labs, the shortage of storage for equipment and casework, inadequate IT systems and infrastructure, supply chain management processes, challenges in this in that regard, and also inadequate human resources. In spite of these challenges, Chairperson, we have noted an overall improvement in clearing the backlog of over 98% from the inception of the turnaround strategy to date. This was also to give effect, the measures that have been put in place to give effect to ministers' priorities. Chair, I'm now on slide.
Can I request that you go a bit quicker on your slides?
Okay.
I think we are running out of time. Thanks.
Okay, that's fine, Chairperson. My apologies. I'll go faster. So, Chairperson, with respect to the strategy to reduce civil claims against SAFs, we had indicated the studies that we've done and analysis that we've done in previous financial years, and the recommendations from these studies and analysis, Chairperson, they have been provided to SAFs for action and implementation. With respect to the policy provisions on crowd control, Chairperson, we did appraise the committee that we developed policies in this regard and guidelines on policing of public protests and also the professional use of force. And in addition to this, Chairperson, relevant amendments were made to the SAPS Act and the Regulation of Gatherings Act to address the Farlam Commission recommendations. And we continue to ensure that these recommendations are implemented through continuous monitoring. Chair, I'm now on slide 35. We have a few slides left. In terms of the functionality of CPFs, with respect to the interventions that we as a department have undertaken, I had indicated that we conduct capacity building sessions for CPFs, specifically focusing on newly elected CPF members. I also alluded to the training that we do to CPFs in line with the MOU that we've signed with Wits University and SACETA. And in the period under review, we conducted assessments on the functionality of CPFs. And the table on this slide just outlines the numbers in terms of those CPFs that have been found to be functional and those that were not found to be functional in relation to the 578 CPFs that were assessed. Chair, with respect to the upcoming update on upcoming legislation, I did indicate that our focus for this financial year is with respect to the IPED Amendment Bill, that we are working on finalizing the bill and that the bill is currently being subjected to the processes of the JCPS cluster for endorsing for cabinet approval. Chair, lastly, the committee inquired in terms of whether there were any previous whether the previous financial statements of the department and our budget shows material losses and how we have taken measures to recover these losses. So, Chair, in the period under review, we did not have any material losses, although there was one case of irregular expenditure of 35,000 Rand, and the department is currently in the process of taking disciplinary action. And then there's also a case that has been referred to the Judicial Service Commission in relation to the DPCI judge and the irregular expenditure. I did indicate that the disciplinary measures have been put in place with the one case that I mentioned. And Chairperson, that then brings us to the end of our presentation. Thank you, I submit.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am. I'm sorry to rush you, but we did have a conversation with CSBS with regard to the how much time you require to make a presentation. But thank you for that. Honourable members, I'm going to request that we interact with the presentation. If you have any questions for clarity and or comments you would like to make, I think now is the time to do that. Okay, I see Honourable Bartlett stands up, but I know Honourable Maleka as well wanted to make some comments on that. If we can take them in that order for now, and if there's any other member who would want to interact with this presentation, you're welcome to do so. Honourable Member Bartlett.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just have two questions. The CSPS around the budget and APP. My first question is on slide 31, Chair. In addition to the awareness campaigns, does CSPS do any surveys to ascertain from communities the challenges that they are encountering? And if so, what has been the outcome of that? And then secondly, Chair, on slide 36, there's still quite a large number of CPS still to be assessed. I know they spoke about this. Is there sufficient capacity for assessment? What challenges are currently existing? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Honourable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to check on slide 24, if they can tell the committee more about this project. There was a brief program on slide 24. If they can tell more about this project and what capacity and resources are being utilized for this. And my last question is on slide 28, monitoring and implementation of IPED recommendations. The evaluation of the implementation of IPED recommendations by the SAPS is also reliant on the databases of the SAPS and the IPED. Does the department have sufficient access to these databases, and is the information reliable? In the past, there has been significant differences in the data provided by the staff and the IT. Is this still a problem? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maleka. Honourable Dulu.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I have a problem with load shedding here, and I'm panicking whether it will sustain me until the end of the meeting. Nevertheless, the following, Honourable Chair. Firstly, there is no question for me that the civil secretariat has got an important role to play. It's very, very much important, especially around issues of policy development and legislation processing. The first question would be, what are its constraints that it needs to be attended to? What are its challenges that will impede the secretariat from fulfilling its own statutory obligations? I'm asking this question under the following background. The background is that last year, very, very late, they would know that we were seized with the Pogdatara legislation, the amendment thereof. And one of the major concerns was that the secretariat was very slow in terms of processing it. We had to rush as parliament, do it in the way that we did. We concluded it, but at the end, South Africa was greatly stressed. And I'm raising this, and I'm not criticizing. I'm just raising it because it is a point that I concerns me. I think that the delays were with the secretariat in terms of fast-tracking that particular process. What are its constraints? Because we really need to help and say we know that there are limitations and they've got to be attended to, so that when such matters come, they are expedited, they are given the necessary attention, and we conclude the process quite timely. I've seen that this is what the role that they play in that particular respect. And I want to know what constraints do they have in fulfilling that particular statutory obligation. The second one, Chair, relates to what I've seen 2 weeks ago, the launch of, I don't know what they call it, but in Gauteng, the brigade. To support the work of the police. For me, I must tell you, I'm very excited. I think this is part of the community-based program to take power, to give it to the people. The people must play an important role because it is our people, it is such brigades who know where the criminals are in the communities. They live with these communities. And it's happening in Gauteng. And my view is that but the Secretariat could develop a national framework on how this can apply so that we, at least on the interim, we take it to the major cities where the crime is rife. We take it to the secondary cities where crime is rife. If this can be launched in my city, I will be very, 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 very much excited, given the fact that there is crime, there is zamazamas, gangsters and everything else. And I've seen that the community members know where these people are. And to formalize this in the way that Gauteng has done it, for me, is quite good. And the Secretariat, in my respective view, can play that role in terms of developing a national framework on how this can be applied nationally, or at least conduct a research and say, this is how this can be done. And these are the areas, these are the centers, these are the cities where this can be applied. My question would then be, have they thought of that? Have they thought of doing that? Because that is quite important. The other question relates to the support that is given to the CPFs. CPFs play very important role. And I'm told when I ask that they do this voluntarily, they do this out of passion. Some of them patrol our streets at night against the criminals and they are not getting paid. And I get worried, or there is no uniform approach to ensure that they have some stipends or some allowances, and this varies. And my view is that why don't we develop a framework if we don't have to ensure that this is how we are going to support them. If we are able to support what
committee...
the CPF, who are playing an important role within our society. And I want to check whether is there such a framework. If it is not there, why can't we develop it so that it's on the table? What we discuss. My ultimate view is that those who do community policing work must be, their work must be enhanced. They must get the necessary tools. They must get the necessary allowances, if this is what it means, in order for them to do their work, because they do risky work. And there is a way that we need to acknowledge and appreciate the work that they do. And the last one, says, sorry for taking time, the last one, the counter-terrorism strategy, where is it? I guess that it is the work of the Secretariat to develop this. Where is it? Why is it not made public? Why the public participation process is not unfolded, so that contributions are made in respect of counterterrorism? This is my pattern, Honorable Chair, if you can realize. I always ask questions around this, because counterterrorism and terrorism financing is a reality that we are going to confront. It's slow now, but we are going to confront it in the future. And as a country, I think we need to be combat ready for counter-terrorism. And South Africa is seen as a hub for terrorism. And we need to find a way of
developing that strategy, and that strategy must be all-encompassing, all-inclusive, encouraging public participation, and that people must make contribution leading towards the development and the finalization of such a strategy. And I want to get their comments on that, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zadovu. Honorable Matamad.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a norm to not to open the screen. Chair.
You can open your screen if you have bandwidth.
No, when the chair didn't open, why must I open? When do you do what?
Oh, no, I've opened it, but when you ask questions, I don't have to continue.
Okay,
to
because we don't know to whom we are speaking to. We don't know them. Chair. I just want to say it's a shame to our community, especially CPF, when they see the brigade have been given an employment with uniform. When you find our granny in the street, our sisters, our children in the street, KwaZulu-Natal, when you saw them here in Sidibeng, guarding the street, arresting the criminals like Ekuruleni, they are volunteering to stop crime, arresting people who are stealing cars, robbing cars, but they are not been recognized. I want to ask Secretarian, when are they going to employ these people permanently? Because they cannot work forever stopping crime and without benefiting anything. They are so strong than some of our police officers. They do a very great job. I want them to tell me when they are going to give them uniform and employ them permanently so that they can stop crime, because they have been volunteering for more than 3 to 5 years. When they are going to assist these people? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Motumai. I think members have pretty much covered most of my issues that I would have wanted to raise. But if I can just raise maybe one or two, I think with regard to the Domestic Violence Act compliance issue and the table that was presented to us of the 461 police stations that were visited, and none are found to be fully compliant. And I think this is of serious concern. While there are only 137 that have significant compliance, and I know the Secretariat has also indicated some of the steps that are being taken to try and ensure more compliance in these police stations, whether it's through your compliance forum, through the stations, focused improvement plans, as well as through capacity building. What I want to know is, have these initiatives made any impact in terms of trying to improve compliance levels in the various police stations? My second issue is regard to that level of coordination between the national CSPS and the provinces. What is being done to try and strengthen that, even given the fact that provinces tend to allocate budgets in line with the provincial priorities, etc. But what is actually being done between the national CSP, the national secretariat, and the provincial Secretariat, while I understand the coordination is also important, especially also to deal with duplication of issues, etc. And I think this is something in the past we've had a discussion around this. But we could maybe just get a brief in terms of how you're going to strengthen that level of coordination between yourself and the provinces, given the challenges within each province. Let me then hand over to yourself. To the Secretariat, maybe to respond, and then the DM can also come in if he has anything to add. Over to you, Dinesh.